Ken, you know our logo says run up the numbers, right?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Because the show is called Run Up the Numbers, right?
Yeah, actually, I was just looking at that, yeah.
Yeah. Why did I have us all up on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts as Running Up the Numbers? Let me tell you how bad it was. In a meeting, Miranda, shout out to Miranda.
Yes,
she was like, Ambush, is it run up the numbers or running up the numbers? And I had, you know, I don't know where my head was, but I corrected her incorrectly. It was like, oh, running, definitely. It's running up the, I too get mixed up. It's actually running up the numbers. It's actually, I have no idea what I'm talking about.
You know, I wish I could laugh at you like, hey, but knowing how often I mince words, phrases, being spread across multiple FM stations. Yeah, I can get it. I can get it.
Yeah. So I had to go back in to our hosting site. Okay. And actually change it because it literally said running up the numbers on everything. Yeah. Yeah. Even, and then looking at some of our previous scripts, yeah, it said running. So, you know.
See, interchange. Well, hey, guys.
We back. We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you miss us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8 p.m. You can also catch the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And now you can catch us every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you follow us on all social media because we out here. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, House Party, YouTube, Twitch, Black Planet, MySpace. We all up on the Tinder.
Swipe, swipe.
Catch us ticking on the talk and Google Plus.
Yes. In this episode, we'll be putting you up on Mitch McConnell saying Obama was our reparations for slavery.
Wow.
And Seattle Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone.
Lynchville Park gets renamed. Jay Farrow becomes a victim of jogging while black.
We have a portion of the X-Ray Morning Show interview with Mingus Maps, but let's start off with Dave Chappelle's new special, 8:46. Thursday night, Dave dropped a 27-minute special addressing the death of George Floyd. If you haven't seen it yet, it's available on both Netflix and YouTube.
Can. So I saw the internet buzzing about it, and I finally got a chance to check it out last night. And, yo, it took me, it was a wide range of emotions. Like, I was happy to see Dave just because, you know, happy to see Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, by the time it was done, I was angry. I was happy. I felt understood. Mm-hmm. Like, it just took me, it took me everywhere, man. But it was great. 27 minutes, man, he killed that. He killed that.
You know, I fully agree. Same thing on the emotional run, and it watching Dave not even expecting. I went into it knowing clearly what it was going to be, kind of centered around, but not so much expecting comedy, right? Yeah. And to see him clearly in a state of being affected by this in the same way that you, I, and the streets.
Yes.
Have been affected. His ability to tie these ideas in the way in which he did, his setups for painting a picture and being like, hey, and which is something I do want to say about just in general, a lot of the explain it to me like I'm a 5-year-old breakdowns of trying to get people who don't understand to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this was something to add into that pot of how can you break this down any further? If you don't get it now, then you almost never will.
Yeah, like you're choosing not to get it.
Yeah,
you're right. He really, especially that last setup where he was talking about the way the cops responded to Chris Dorner.
Yes,
and I didn't realize, like he said, like close to 400 police officers showed up. And I mean, here's the thing. Had only 100 showed up, do we think he was going to make it out of there? I mean, 400 showed up for this. And like you said, so why is it that you don't understand our reaction right now? Like, you're making these conscious choices to just disregard black life. So there's no, you don't understand, there's no equity there. It's like, for them, their immediate response would be, well, that's not the same. No, it's literally the same.
The same. And 400. When we hear a word like 400, right? I don't think people understand 400 of anything, including human beings in right. one, especially right. human beings in a place at one time.
Right.
What that actually looks like.
Right.
A lot of packed gatherings you've been to has been no more than 100 to 150 people.
Right, right.
So 400 people showing up because this is essentially a call to arms. One of ours has been, we have to protect, we have to avenge is what that really,
that's really
came down to.
Like, honestly, when you have that many officers show up, like, so we're talking multiple vehicles of different sizes. Everyone's armed. There's a higher probability that they'll injure each other with that many people showing up, that many officers on one location.
Run up the numbers.
Like yeah. I've only watched it once. I'm definitely going to watch it again.
That's what I watched it the once, and then I put it on as I was brushing teeth and so on this morning, getting prepped, letting it run again, and doing it this time where it was just listening versus watching. It's one of those things that I think that I'll have listened to 20, 30 times over the next year.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel like this is going to be revisited, and I wouldn't be surprised if this pops up in some college student's dissertation.
straight up. I might have to chop some of this up and FCC clear it so we can air some portions of it. But that was dope. That was real dope. Up next, Lynchville Park, renamed Verdell Berdeen Rutherford Park. The name of the park is Southeast 167th Ave and Market Street in East Portland has been changed from Lynchview Park to Verdell Berdeen Rutherford Park. Verdell Berdeen, born in Oklahoma, moved with her family to Oregon in 1913, hoping to get farmland under the Enlarged Homestead Act of 1909. When they got here, they learned that black people were not allowed to own land in the state of Oregon. 23 years later, Verdell married Otto Rutherford, and they made Portland their home. As leaders of the Oregon chapter of the NAACP, they oversaw the passage of the Public Accommodations Act of 1953, which outlawed discrimination in public places on the basis of race, religion, and national origin. Verdell was also a historian of the black community here in Portland. A decade after Verdell's passing, Charlotte gifted her mother's historical collection to Portland State University in 2011. Where today it remains accessible for academic research and public use as her mother desired. Charlotte Rutherford is quoted as saying, "Mom rightfully considered herself a local historian. She was that and so very much more. A beautiful woman with a kind heart and a wonderful sense of humor. A very good cook, especially her yeast rolls. And most importantly to and for me, a loving, supportive, and inspirational mother. She was a hardworking volunteer and community activist who did not seek the limelight, but she would have accepted this honor humbly, knowing that this park will provide a place for the community to gather together."
Clap.
Straight up.
Can we rewind to traveling across the country to find out, not Blair.
Not around here. Not in these parts.
You ain't got an email. There ain't no post-its. Nothing. Just got to find it out.
Right. Once you get there. Your whole plan is a no. Because you're black.
Like that exhale. Think about being disappointed the times you've went to go get a breakfast sandwich and you got there at 11:08 and they're not giving no cuts. Think right. of that exhale. Like, right. Oh, really?
Right. The nerve. Yikes. The nerve to have the exhale now. It's like, get over it, bro.
Yeah. Man, yeah. But definitely applaud this.
Absolutely. This is amazing. Lynchview Park. I mean, why? Like, why did it take this long? Why is everything taking so long? Like, you saw the flip-flop with Starbucks, right?
Yes. Just a flip-flop. They came back with a shirt merch.
Uniform, right. You went from, nah, we don't need your politics with our coffee, to, here's the new uniform, guys. Put it on.
Look. The power, something I have to take back, and sorry to go on this quick little tangent, you know, I had said something, and I needed to clarify on my socials where I was like, why share things that you don't like seeing, right?
Right.
And I specifically was talking more so videos, putting them into to where now I don't have the option to skip the video and just read the article or something. And in this time of seeing what has come just in this past few weeks of the unrest and the chain reaction that this has caused due to that. And I still feel the way that I feel because I still don't want to have to see certain things. I've seen enough of it in my lifetime, but I no longer feel as strongly as I do about people putting it out there.
Yeah. I didn't watch the full 8 minutes, and
I've yet to even watch 14 seconds.
Yeah. I don't. The little now this quick edits is all I really need, honestly. I know enough what happened.
These names, like you just said, the Lynchview, like it's right there in the name.
Right. Right. And I understand there are people upset. Oh, there are people upset that it's no longer called Lynchview.
Every single time.
Right.
Well, Mitch McConnell has some takes on reparation compensation. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has some very paleo-progressive takes on reparations as it relates to the past enslavement of black Americans. These takes from the mouth of McConnell include... We tried to deal with our original sin of slavery by fighting the Civil War, by passing landmark civil rights legislation, and elected an African-American president. And another crowd favorite, Mitch said, I don't think we should be trying to figure out how to compensate for it. First of all, it would be hard to figure out whom to compensate. And that reparations for something that happened 150 years ago, for whom none of us currently are living or responsible, is not a good idea. Let's also not forget that McConnell was Obama's chief adversary during his presidency, even going as far as to gloat and proclaiming that his top goal was to make Obama a one-term president, and famously blocked Obama's nomination of Judge Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court during the final year of his presidency. Knowing this man's past and present, I'm sure we'll be hearing more from the mouth of McConnell in the coming weeks and months.
I'm going to sound a little weird saying this. This is the thing about Mitch McConnell that you can appreciate. Mm-hmm. He's unapologetically, unabashed, just racist. Mm-hmm. And there's never a time where you're like, oh, well, this maybe is a little... No. There's never a time when you're taking things out of context when it comes to Mitch. Mitch is very, very clear.
Yeah.
That's old school, insane in public racist.
Yeah.
Like, you're bugging hard, bro.
I'm appreciative, like you said. I've said that many a times. Something about somebody just being exactly who they are. Mm-hmm. There's a part that has to respect it. not so much respect the thinking or agree, but right. have to take that you feel this way wholly.
Right.
And you're not trying to hide that. I know who I'm getting, what I'm getting in dealing with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And he represents, you know, a lot of people that think exactly like he does.
That's what I was going to say. He holds a title.
Yeah, he does.
Meaning he's been pushed right along with these thoughts and views.
Yeah. Comedian Jay Farrow almost became a hashtag. Mm. You probably know Jay Farrow from his uncanny impersonations, or maybe from the time he spent on Saturday Night Live. In any event, his recent run-in with the LAPD serves as a reminder that no person of color is safe from racial profiling. The incident, which took place back in April, now has footage and a statement from Jay posted on his Instagram account. The video footage from a security camera shows Jay being approached by not one, but four officers with guns drawn. They order him to get on the ground and spread his arms because apparently he fit the description of a man they're looking for. None of the officers, wore masks or gloves while handling Jay, despite current pandemic guidelines. He soon found himself with one of the officers' knees on his neck and being handcuffed. He informed them that they were making a big mistake and should Google his name. Soon after, he was released with an apology. The video he posted on Instagram ends with him saying, "Be in the know. I'm Jay Farrow, and I'm a black man in America, and my life matters. Black lives always matter. They always matter."
It goes back to even like the thing of Dave Chappelle.
Right.
Talking about, you know, getting pulled over by the same cop who killed a dude the next day.
Like, that was wild. When he mentioned that, I was like, okay. And then also just seeing that it was Jay Farrow, mm-hmm. and being able to see that footage with them walking up with guns drawn, I was like, yo, he definitely could have been out of here. Mm. And not that, you know, he's any better than anyone mm-hmm. else, but to me, the first thing that came to my mind was like, no, we definitely could have just watched Jay Farrow get killed on camera.
Yeah.
That's wild. I mean, we all look alike, apparently, so.
The description is fitting.
Yeah.
Well, Capitol Hill's autonomous zone is holding strong. Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood, the area around 12th and Pine, has been renamed CHAZ, which is short for Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, with some calling it CHOP, short for Capitol Hill Organized Protest. This area, which has been filled with protesters, has made national headlines and even drew the attention of a couple big names, including Trump, who said, "We're not going to allow Seattle to be occupied by anarchists." And Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who said, "This is no different than ISIS taking over cities in the Middle East," during his Fox News interview. The images of the area definitely paint a different picture than the comments made. The CHAZ area is barricaded, and within that barricaded is Seattle Police Department's East Police Precinct. A Black Lives Matter mural similar to the one in D.C. has been created and spans over close to an entire city block. Despite the not-so-favorable attention protesters have gained in the media, many local businesses are donating food, medical supplies, changing stations, and restrooms for protesters in a display of solidarity with the protesters' grievances. Seattle's Mayor Jenny Durkin didn't provide any clues about what may be next, but Seattle's Police Chief Carmen Best, in an interview with King 5, expressed visible frustration over the vague future of the East Precinct. "My goal is to have the officers back in the facility," said Best. She said a few officers have already made their way back inside, but for the most part, continue to operate outside of the CHAZ.
So when I saw footage of that, it looked really peaceful. It looked really like they took over the precinct, mm-hmm. renamed it the People's Precinct, mm-hmm. and people were just walking the streets. There were some street vendors out there. It just looked really chill, and it to me it communicated that the leadership there understood that the presence of police is an issue, mm-hmm. in them trying to be seen, trying to be heard, trying to protest. Having the police around is not a good look.
Yes. There was something that I came across yesterday, which it was a photographer had taken some pictures of kids, walking with their parents, the business sign saying open, yet his captions to each of them were like, look at them grooming these young terrorists. And
oh, wow.
They have taken over this area and painted open signs on the businesses. Like, so he's making a mockery of with how peaceful this is, but trying to show how people will try to spin this in the ways in which they'll do it.
Yeah.
And I found it hilarious. But as you said, there's a tone that's there. They said there's been, you know, your little minor things, but nothing like it would be painted as far as just anarchy overtaken. And in a comparison, the ISIS?
Yikes, come on, man. Luckily, thankfully, we live in a time where everyone can be a journalist, whether photojournalists, video journalists, you know, on the scene, taking notes, typing it up. So we're not locked into any single person's story of, you know, of what's happening. But yeah, it's, we're starting to see a change, and people don't like it. They're not ready for it. I'm gonna stop saying people. Racists don't like it. They're not ready for it. Those aren't human beings to me. I don't know what they are, but they're not people.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah. I can't be publicly racist. I don't like it.
Hell, feet stops.
Right. I won't have it. Can't even be diet racist. I won't have it. So upset. Up next, we have part of our recent interview with myself and Jefferson Smith of X-Ray in the Morning, featuring Mingus Maps, who is running for Portland City Council position number 4. Hello, everyone. This is DJ Ambush of The Numbers and X-Ray FM. In Portland, 4 of the 5 city council seats are on the ballot. There's a chance that not only will the city council become majority people of color, but there is a chance that 3 of the 5 seats will be filled by black leaders.
And I'm Jefferson Smith. I'm with Ambush. Mingus Maps is in a runoff with incumbent Chloe Udaly for position 4 on the city council. Mingus received 28.65% of the votes, just 5,700 votes behind incumbent Chloe Udaly. That forced a runoff. That primary drew over 200,000, more like 212,000 votes for position 4, and there's going to even be more votes in November. So it's anybody's race. Today, Mingus Maps is here with us to discuss the race, also probably discuss the current discussions around racial justice and Mingus Maps' vision for Portland. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you for having me. I always love to be on your show.
I have to admit, be 100% honest, when I saw the connection between you and the police, there was a visceral, there was a very instinctual, you know, thing that popped up. Was like, oh, well, this can't work for me. So I want to start there. What do you say to voters that may have seen that and their immediate response, especially voters of color? We have had very tumultuous relationships with the police department, and we don't necessarily, we haven't in the past seen what appears to be, you know, cops taking a knee and kind of communicating that they are willing to listen. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, there was a temporary stay in the use of tear gas that was reported, I believe, a day or two ago. But I spoke to protesters last night. Tear gas and rubber bullets were being used as of last night. It was still happening. So when we're talking about, you know, having trust, and how do you address that?
Sure. Well, let's talk about the use of tear gas and the bullets. Obviously, that's unacceptable, especially the bullet thing. That's truly dangerous and shouldn't have happened. And if it did happen, that's, I think, a problem. Also, I point out that this is a matter of elected leadership. There is a police commissioner in town who should provide direction on this. I think we need to have a, I don't even think we need to have a community conversation on it. I think the rubber bullets are utterly unacceptable. I think the tear gas is counterproductive. There are elected leaders in Portland who can fix that and should fix that. I'm disappointed that hasn't happened yet. But that's one of the things that, you know, when I talk to my friends who are on city council and in policymaking positions, you know, that's where I'm urging them to go. And listen, I'm an African-American male too. I'm 6'1", 250 with a shaved head. Like there's, you know, there are not a lot of people in Portland who understand the problems surrounding race and policing better than I do. I've lived this, you know, they say you have to have 10,000 hours to become an expert in something. I've been a black man for 50 years. So I have like 250,000 hours of being, you know, of practicing how to deal with racism and police. And one of the things that I have learned is that if we want to make this work, we actually have to be constructive. You know, we have to listen to each other. And that's what I have done throughout my entire career, is to try to bring people together to solve the problems that matter to us most. There is no way to solve the problems of policing in Portland without having the police at the table. You know, which doesn't mean that they get a veto, but if they're going to do the work of public safety, I believe we should honor the workers and have them at the table and talk about what the issues are.
Okay.
And I think if you talk about a police, if you talk to police, if you talk to police in an honest, straightforward way, they return that to you, and you can identify the problems. You know, the cops, don't like what they're being asked to do either. They're frustrated with leadership. They don't, you know, people don't trust the police, and the police don't trust their political leaders. You know, this is a recipe for disaster. This is why we have 2 weeks of people out on the streets every night, and an elected leadership that seems unable to resolve the problem. If you want change, you have to embrace change. I represent change. You know, there has been only 3 people on city council who have ever looked like, or no, 2 black men on city council. And those come from decades ago. And we face very different problems. If you want to sort of make policing responsive to the needs of African Americans, I really think that one of the things you should do is have an African American at the table.
So just in the situation or example of the tear gassing, and I don't mean to harp on this, but trying to understand where a breakdown of communication could happen or just a total disregard of orders could happen where this or tear gas could continue to be used. So I am not a member of law enforcement. I'm not a member of city government. I'm just a member of the public. And it was brought to my, you know, came across my table. It was brought to my attention that tear gas is off the table. So if I know that, am I to understand that somehow the message got lost and the officers that were out last night didn't know that, or they're still using tear gas regardless of that information being out there? So I'm not asking because I'm not, you know, you're not in the squad room. You don't know what's going on, but you could, I'm sure you could understand what that communicates to the public and then how that would dovetail into what it would look like with you being attached to the police in any capacity.
Well, you know, the answer to the tear gas is for the police commissioner, who's the mayor, to place a clear order that we don't use tear gas against peaceful protesters. And I think that message has been a little bit muddy. I suspect the mayor is probably at his mom's funeral right now. And that might have some reason as to why this message has not been communicated effectively. But I'll tell you, when I'm on city council, it will be communicated effectively. This is something that just needs to happen. What we're doing right now doesn't work. We're probably in our 13th day of nightly protest. You know, the last time I was down in downtown, we had 16 blocks of the city chained off. It's almost hard to imagine how the core, the heart of Portland can come back under these current circumstances. We got to get this right. And part of getting this right is to stop using tear gas. And if there are rubber bullets out there, that is the first I've heard about that. I'm upset about that. It's my understanding that that's just flat out against policy. So that's a screw up. And this is an example where we need to have police accountability. In other words, like someone shooting bullets out there last night, you know, it's time to sort of, that can't happen again. And there has to be.
How's the mayor doing? Mingus, how's the mayor doing?
How's the mayor doing? It's a tough job. You know, and yep. I know that it's a tough job.
Assumed it's a tough job. It's a historically challenging time. And how is he doing in this historically? And I would say, like, there are those of us, I'm one of them, who was impressed with his COVID-19 response.
For those just tuning in, that was Mingus Maps as he was featured on X-Ray in the Morning. You can catch X-Ray in the Morning weekdays at 7 a.m. on 107.1 and 90.1 or on xray.fm. Download the app.
Make sure you check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Run Up the Numbers, hosted by Can Jones and DJ Ambush. This episode also features Mingus Maps and Jefferson Smith. Special thanks to our researchers and writers, Shireen Hassan, Sham Shawan, Hannah, Alicia, and Joseph Watson. Music by C.
And we did.
All this for 50?
Shout out to NASCAR.